It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Access of Easy, Thursday evening. Not quite happy hour. It's after happy hour now. This is number 351. My name is Joey. That's Len, brother. What's going on over there? How the heck are you?
Living the dream, man. The weather's good. Tomorrow is going to be the first time we're going to play a full round of golf in quite some time. Willow Valley. And I'm not sure if you know that one. That's
a great course.
Yeah, I got some. Yeah, my friend has a good package, $65 all in with cart, and he's got still a bunch more to go. So it's gonna be, I think, once a month we're gonna go there. So I'm stoked, man, because you know what? Like last week we played Chidoke and got rained out, but good rain policy over there. But you know what? It's good. Summer's here. Weather is getting nice and warm. The grass is growing. Got to mow it again. And yeah, how are things over there?
Great, man. Super weather. I am riding my bike into work every day. So this week, my round trip is like 15 kilometers. So what's today? Thursday? I didn't go Monday because we had the day off. So 15, 30, 45. I'll have finished 60 kilometers on the bike just commuting to work by the end of the day tomorrow, which is fantastic. I don't think it's supposed to rain tomorrow. I would assume not.
No rain. Yeah. No, the weekend, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, Monday too, I think.
Whatever. Don't care about that. But the as long as it doesn't rain tomorrow, that's good. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful weather. I don't even want to jinx it by saying that, we've been lucky. But, you know, if we can keep getting these nice days, I'll appreciate it for sure. It's been too long. Canadian winters are so long. It's like 7 months of rain and snow, some mix of the two. For 4 or 5 months of decent weather, right? So I'm happy about that. So is my dog. Anyway,
this is gonna be his first summer he's gonna experience, right?
Yeah. He was born in August last year, so he's experiencing the heat. I have to get him groomed. I'm trying to find a groomer that will take him, but everyone's busy, of course. Anyway, Access of Easy. Last week's quote: "Life's tragedy is that we get too old, or get old too soon, and wise too late." That was from Ben Franklin, and Garen got it right. Congratulations, Garen. Well done. This week's quote, Len. Peace is not absence of conflict. It is the ability to handle conflict by peaceful means. Wise words. If you know who that was from, who said that, put it in the comments. No cheating, no looking it up, no Googling. You guys know the deal. And your next round of renewals is on Mark and Co. if you're the first person to get it right. So, Len, we got how many this week? 5.5 stories to cover. From Mark and Joan, where do you want to start? We got a couple of bangers here. I just want to say, I'm surprised that the Windows update about the screen capturing stuff didn't make it in here. Do you know about that?
No.
We'll see that eventually. While you're reading this story, I'll see if I can find it. We'll add it to the
bonus content.
To the list, yeah.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, yeah, okay. I'll start off with then. I'll be as long as possible to get by you some time, even though we'll do that story last, Joey. But YouTube, and there's some issues going on over there where people are exploiting that system to spread malware and scams. And everybody out there knows about phishing emails that are being used by scammers, right? Those are emails that are sent to appear to be from legitimate sources. And those emails, they're trying to lure users into clicking malicious links or downloading attachments that contains malware. Well, fake collaboration opportunities are another tactic. And that's where scammers are impersonating well-known organizations or content creators. And this is to trick users into revealing personal information or sending money. The people that they are trolling here, they're very far left of the bell curve. So even compromised video descriptions can be misleading because the scammers might alter the descriptions to include links in it, and that would be to malicious websites or software downloads. Mm-hmm. So this is an emerging threat of deepfakes that's on YouTube. And deepfakes are videos that have been manipulated using AI to make it appear that somebody is saying or doing something that they've never done. We've seen a lot of this on Twitter for very short clips, and it's now, unfortunately, has made its way to YouTube. And scammers, they're trying to leverage these deepfakes to impersonate these, you know, authoritative figures or celebrities and trying to deceive viewers to doing stuff like donating money, as I mentioned earlier. So to combat these scams, security researchers recommend educating users about tactics and training about something that appears, you know, false, some false communication. So people need to be understand what the situation. So they have to basically be exposed to it, understand it, and then be able to identify this as a scam. So people should be vigilant out there and start exercising caution when they see a message, especially something that's too good to be true. When they send, please send some money, we'll double it and send it back to you. Like, how can that be? But still people are falling for this. And even YouTube has gone to efforts. Not too long ago, I'll say about a month and a half ago, when you upload a video to YouTube, they're asking content creators the question if the video that they are uploading, is this altered content? And they're asking if it was altered in any way for, is this making a person appear to say something they didn't say, or altering footage or real event or a place, or generating a realistic looking scene that didn't actually occur. So essentially using AI. So YouTube is asking every content creator, when they upload this information, their videos, is this something that's AI generated? Of course, I would imagine these scammers are clicking no, still uploading it anyways, and this is falling through the cracks. But nonetheless, YouTube is trying to do what they can to treat this seriously. And you know what, Joey? Even you and I are out there. We've done hundreds and hundreds of hours. And that's the one thing I kind of wonder, because, you know, our voice or likeness could easily be used and in such a way, just, you know, use it, AI, do something. Well, it wasn't us, but, you know, it sucks. This is the reality. This is the 21st century, and there's a lot of things going on that, you know, that just a lot of shadiness, and it's too bad. So sad.
We're headed that way, you and I. I look forward to finding out that I've said something, you know, despicable in the public square, only to find out that it was AI. You know what the weird thing about this is? You have YouTube Premium, right? We talked about this before. I think you're a premium subscriber, so you don't see the ads. There's no ads on videos for you. Is that how that works?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so I'll tell you that I don't have premium, and one of the problems I have with the ads is that they're almost always AI generated scams. Almost always. For example, I saw one maybe 2 weeks ago or a week ago. I wanted to screen record it, but when I went back and refreshed the video, it gave me a different ad, probably equally as bunk. But the ad was CBC's news desk sort of banner, right? If you turn on CBCNN. And a CBC anchor who I would imagine is an actual anchor, with clearly what was an AI generated kind of mouth movement. Easy for me to tell. I've seen enough of these videos now that I can tell from the anchor saying that, you know, Canada's Chrystia Freeland has opened a new program for Canadians who want to invest up to $350 to receive back up to $15,000. If you were born between the years 1965 and 2005, pretty crazy. So when I hear that YouTube is like, quote unquote, cracking down on things like this, I got to call BS, because all the ads are this exact thing. And how many times have you and me seen like the Sailor videos running on YouTube with the Monero, Bitcoin, Litecoin, XRP donation QR codes? Where he's talking about some, you know, some stuff that he did in the past, and it's like AI generated speech or whatever. This stuff is everywhere. And YouTube is the culprit more than they're, you know, they're the arsonist more than they're the firefighter in this, you know, in reality. And yet here I am, you know, reading that they're trying to crack down. They're taking money from these guys for ads. So there's a gap here. Where's the gap? Why does this gap exist? Clearly there's something going on behind the scenes that you and I are not privy to here.
Yeah, their advertising department is not teaming up or not speaking to the people in the compliance department. Yeah. So they're in two different wings of the YouTube building, so they don't interact too much.
They're all working from home.
Or they're working from home, and, you know, some may be in the western side of San Francisco, and the other could be maybe in Oakland, for instance, and is, you know, crossing that bridge is brutal. So yeah, you can understand, right? Like, it's just, that's the way it is.
You know,
anyways,
this is the way business is done. Yeah, no problem.
So let's go over and talk about Europol data. And there was a breach over there. And Europol, that's the law enforcement agency for the European Union. Well, they recently shed some light on something, because they're, well, they're encryption standards. Let's be honest. This is really what's the gist of it. So Europol has been vocal advocate for weakening encryption standards. And they have been arguing that strong encryption hinders law enforcement investigations into criminal activity. That's a great argument that they're saying. But however, there's been a recent data breach at Europol itself. And this raises the questions about the agency's own cybersecurity practices and its stance on encryption. I find this to be rather rich here. And so the nature and severity of this data breach remains, this is troubling, somewhat unclear. And while Europol is downplaying the incident, some reports suggest that the leaked data may include classified information and potentially compromising sensitive law enforcement operations. And this inconsistency between Europol's public statement and the severity of this breach has caused a lot of criticism for the agency's handling of the situation. Also of note is the tension between law enforcement's desire for greater access to private communications and the importance of strong encryption for user privacy and security. We've talked about this numerous times, and Europol argues that they say that they need to weaken these encryption standards and these laws just to give them the ability to prevent crime and deal with crime. But really, come on, like let's look at what happened here. They were pwned here. They must have had terrible cybersecurity protocols, or their encryption practice or the encryption that they're putting into play is just not strong enough. So there you go. And who's the people that are benefiting from this? The hackers. And who's impacted? Well, the people that they had their data stolen. So it could be somebody that has a criminal record, or even somebody that they're just doing an investigation on that doesn't even have a criminal record. Now these hackers have that information, maybe their home address, where they work, how much they make, and so much more information. And they could use this to really seriously harm these individuals. Europol, man, it's not good here, man. Just you guys, you dropped the ball pretty bad.
Well, I don't even know what I'm supposed to say about this. We have this story basically every week with just the names changed. Like first on the topic of, you know, this access they want to everyone's communications, it's ridiculous. And there's nothing else to say about that. As far as the hack itself, it's almost guaranteed that it's almost guaranteed to contain classified information. Is it not? Europol is a huge organization. Clearly they have stuff that they don't want other people to see, which makes me laugh. I think the other thing I would note here is that, you know, there's a need for privacy among this organization and others, but not for the individual. They don't see the, you know, clear juxtaposition there, the clear kind of hypocrisy. My windows can't be open, but yours have to be open all the time. That's, you know, It's just kind of common sense. There's a need for privacy among all people, all corporations, all, you know, individuals and whatnot. And the lack of willingness to be fair in their assessment of when and where privacy is required, it's not good faith, I don't think, to be honest with you. And I don't expect it to change, but I do expect, like you said, these attacks to continue. And for the hackers, who are sort of infamously and notoriously agile, to continue to be the winners more often than not. So, you know, look out for another story like this next week. Look forward to talking to you about it.
And 100% they got sensitive information. You're exactly right. What else does Europol have in their database?
There's only sensitive information. Like, if it has to be hacked, it's sensitive. Yeah. This is the other thing I don't get. Right? We talked about this before. Like,
could be the lottery that they're running. Like, you know, the so maybe that listen, is.
If I had to hack it, if I had to hack it, it was sensitive by definition, right? This idea that, like, oh, they didn't get anything important. Well, why is it password protected? Why is it behind, you know, the closed doors, walled gardens, whatever? Because it's sensitive. That's why. You can't pretend it's not. It's all sensitive. Otherwise, you'd have it on your website. If you don't, then come on, man. It's like crazy. God, this is every week it's like this. I just wind up getting fired up.
Let's talk about, well, there's something going on, cybercrime, that is... Well, if we've heard about the brief forums.
This was last week. This was last week we did this.
Well, we've talked about them in the past. I'm fairly sure we talked about them, but this notorious cybercrime forum known as breach forums. Well, some interesting stuff going on. The forum gained some level of fame for serving as a marketplace for stolen data, right? And this includes login credentials, financial information, and other kinds of information they had stored over there, and people were just selling it. But just as you mentioned last week, law enforcement, believed the FBI, took action by seizing the forum and effectively shutting it down, at least for now. It looks like the administrators behind the breach forum, they are determined to revive their operations. They love it. They love it so much because they're even planning to do relaunch on the dark web. And the dark web refers to a hidden part of the internet that can only be accessed through specific software, and it's making it very difficult to capture people and find people. So a lot of illicit activity takes place over there. Anyways, the forum administrators, they have already secured a new address on the dark web. So spinning up a new website is likely the next step. So while some of the forum administrators were apprehended during this FBI, or at least perceived to be FBI takedown, it remains unclear whether these arrests are directly linked to the forum's planned return, because there's speculation that one of the arrested administrators may have cooperated with law enforcement by surrendering login credentials in exchange for leniency. But nothing has been confirmed by official sources. So right now, it remains to be seen how law enforcement will respond to the forum's relaunch attempt. But it looks like this is going to happen. And if it does, and they can't take it down, it just goes to show you that it's a toothless endeavor to try to stop these types of websites, especially on a dark web.
You were breaking up a little bit there when you were reading the story. So I hope people can.
Oh.
It's okay, but people should be able to make out what the story is. We talked about this last week, like you mentioned. Len, if these guys can't get down something like breach forums, what can they get down?
Nothing. Because nothing. If you're able, right, essentially nothing. It's a toothless, they can bark all you want.
It's as bad as it gets. Right. You can't keep it off the internet. Like what? Then what can you keep off the internet? This is why when people say that like censorship and pulling, you know, stuff off the internet is sort of this fruitless exercise, part of me says that that's true and we should fight against it. But the other part of me is kind of like, let them try. Like, what's the track record like for stuff like this over the years? It's not been great. That's for sure. And this one, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Mark about this in Montreal. And the funniest thing is that people actually like spend time accessing these forums. They put up all the stuff. The data is all there for people to use and steal and whatever. And, you know, even with all that, they're so confident in their ability not only to remain anonymous and continue to use the forum, but someone in that lot is confident enough to put up the website again. You know, that to me is just like an example of they know something you don't know. And that something is that it's impossible to get this stuff down if you know the right people and understand what you're doing. And this is a great, great example. Are we going to get 3 weeks in a row for this story next week? Like, what are the odds?
Maybe.
Takedown, a second takedown.
They got to monetize this somehow. I'm talking about not just the people that are putting up the website, but maybe even the people like in the SEC. Let's make an ETF out of this, right? And just let's do that, approve it, and just list it.
Ticker BRCH. Go. It's a two. It's actually a 2x levered takedown ETF.
The options are limitless, Joey. Let's talk about Siren. And this is a new email list that specifically aims to distribute threat intelligence relevant to open source projects. This intends to be a central hub where developers, security researchers, and anyone interested can engage in discussions about security vulnerabilities. Also exploits, they could talk about that, and also best practices as a way to address all this garbage. And this is a critical distinction of the Siren mailing list because this, it means anybody could get into this, the way that it's set up, and I'll explain it in just a little bit. So one of the noteworthy features is that it's a publicly accessible mailing list. That means anybody's able to view the discussions happening within the list, regardless of whether they are subscribed or not. And this is in contrast to other mailing lists in the domain of open source security, like OSSecurity, which are private. So the Open Source Security Foundation anticipates that the Siren mailing list will cultivate a sense of shared responsibility and collaborative defense within the open source community. And by openly sharing information about threats and vulnerabilities, the community can then be better equipped to defend itself from attacks. So in essence, the Siren mailing list represents a significant initiative by the Open Source Security Foundation to enhance communications and collaboration around security threats that plague open source projects. So I like this. Seems good on paper. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out over time, but again, just on the surface, just looking at this, it looks pretty good. I like this initiative, but will it work in the end? Time will tell.
I don't know enough about this. Like, what kind of stuff would they be sharing here exactly that you wouldn't be able to get on a show like Access of Easy, right? I know the forum, obviously, format is different, but what's the, like, what gap is this filling? Is there a gap?
So in Access of Easy, it's a one way, we're telling people. Or
explaining, yeah, you know what I mean? The format is a little different, but like, as far as, you know, sort of the information being presented, you know, most of the time, for example, when you and me share a story, right? If I look at, I don't know, what's a good example? What's one we just did maybe a week
ago? What about XZ compression tools? That was
sure. That's a good one. Yeah, the Linux one, right? So the thing about that story, when we share it, we the sort of back and forth about the threat has already been captured. And so it's aggregated in an article and then further aggregated by us as part of a show where we do, you know, five or six of those stories. I'm not saying we would do it better than the forum. I'm just saying, like, for people who really need to know what the threat is this filling a gap? I don't know if maybe this is like a half-baked thought I'm having, but it feels to me like this is a good initiative. But to your point, like, is it going to be used? Are people going to be, like, you know, going here as part of their bets? Are we, as a, you know, a podcast duo here, is there going to be a story that Mark and Joan capture from this forum, you think?
You know what, it works if it's the first point of entry, or people that it's the first place they go to. Just like when people want to search for anything, they go to Google. So if you want to search for anything with respect to security and privacy and anything along those lines, if you go to there,
they'll go here. Yeah.
So that's when you know it's successful, and that's when you say that it's heading in the right direction. But unless it does that, even if it's like not number one, maybe second or third or fourth, but it has to be like one of the top points where people go to. And if it's not there, then I don't deem this to be much of a success. Sounds good in paper, but the reality, I share your concerns. I mean, is it covering something? Is it making life better? Is it improving?
I don't know.
The sharing of information.
Man.
Time will tell. And I will not, you know, take some time before we figure it out which way it's going. But
yeah,
let's move on, because there's still, I think, two more plus the bonus story.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a privacy concern, and it's all because what's going on in the digital age, right? The way we use libraries has changed over the last few decades. And so there was a California-based lawyer named Christine Dudley. And, well, she discovered something that's very unsettling. And it's the possibility of targeted advertising. And this might be influenced by a user's library checkout history. So you go check out a book, then they're using that information to potentially send over targeted ads just based on your borrowing habits. So it seems kind of odd, because she was noticing these targeted ads based on her phone, just as from these audio.
Yeah, but anyway. it should be noted that she's listening to it as an audiobook on her phone, right? So if I like game this out and try to reverse engineer it, how do you search for an audiobook that you want to take out at the library?
You potentially would do it in Google or Amazon,
or you type it in your phone,
right? But using one of those,
yeah. I think that the keyboard captures ad data. That's been my stance for a long time. I don't know if that's already been discussed or people know this is true or not true, but I think that's where the phone gets a lot of advertising data about you.
I have no comment to that. I mean, you might be right. You might be right. I have, there's no way for me to verify this. It's just simply an assumption at this particular moment. So, I mean, with respect to this one, though, the library says their policy is in place and this is going to shield their users' privacy. But these safeguards may not necessarily apply to third-party apps that users interact with. And you were mentioning the keyboard. That's maybe a first-party app, but still, it's outside the realm of the library. And they say that the process by the ad targeting occurs, it's often shrouded in secrecy. and it makes it very difficult to pinpoint the exact cause. So in this case, both the library and the app developer, they deny sharing the data, yet the possibility of data leakage remains an open question. So the targeted ads for the library audiobooks right now remains a mystery, but maybe you solved it. It could have been just what's in the, just simply typing it into keyboard and it's being captured somehow through the OS. But what do I know? This is just, you know,
well, we're talking I gotta be honest with you. I don't really believe this person. Like if I think about my own behavior, which I realize has got to be some kind of logical fallacy, but you know, for her to say you don't coincidentally come across mobile ads for that particular subgenre, she told the Register, those ads made me extremely angry. What is the likelihood, Len, that you just decide one day that you want to go into this like very strange, dark corner of reading or listening, I guess in her case, to a, you know, a certain genre of books, and you don't ever Google it? Look, Googling it is one thing, but you know what the bigger thing is? When I have a sports injury, okay, again, my own anecdotes here, but when I have a sports injury, oftentimes I will Google things surrounding that injury. Stuff like, you know, if I hurt my hamstring, like I'll Google glute exercises or knee strengthening exercises or running exercises or agility exercises, stuff like that. The Google, I mean, all algorithms do this, but we'll stick with Google for now. The algorithm doesn't just look at what you search and try to feed you stuff that's close. It triangulates. So if you start searching for, I don't know, what's a good example? You know, let's say you're a pregnant woman, okay? And you start searching for, why am I feeling sick in the morning? Why am I suddenly bloated all the time? Why is my libido up or down? Why do I have these weird cravings? And you start getting fed ads for strollers and cribs. It's not because this thing is reading your mind or because you bought a stroller or a crib. It's because if it looks at all the searches you've done, it goes, this person probably also wants to see this. And the thinking, I think, sort of at first glance is, this is such a weird niche topic. There's no way it could get this on its own. The way you should be thinking is, this is such a weird niche topic that it's the only thing you could be actually thinking about if you're thinking about these other things. That's what she's missing. And I think if we had seen this article in sort of a, I don't know, like a Krebs or something like that, you might've seen that linkage made. I think they missed the point here a little bit. Am I onto something there? What do you think?
No, it seems reasonable, but maybe this whole thing is just made up and it's a deep fake that was created. And
I'm not convinced you're not a deep fake. Honestly, I haven't seen you in like 2 months. So I don't
know. That is true. Yeah. I'm actually really playing tennis right now. This is a fake community doing this. Let's go to the second last story because we have that bonus one coming
sure,
up.
Sure. Sure.
And this has to do with a EasyDNS blog that came out on May 17th. And it talks about the email forwarding to Rogers mailboxes that were reportedly slowed down or missing emails. The blog, check it out. It goes through a lot of technical data here in terms of what could be causing this. Could be stricter enforcement of email providers that are more likely to flag or even reject emails that fail some authentication checks, or could be other options for slowdowns. Could be some wildcard forwarding and destination mailbox problems, because even destination mailbox could be full or have other issues. But what I suggest, if you have been noticing issues, go on the blog, take a look at this. They provide some remedies and explanations as to a way to get around this. And at least you'd be informed why this is the case. So good on EasyDNS to inform the customers, give them information so that they can take this moving forward and be informed.
Mark really is the best. He always takes care to make sure that his customers understand what's going on and why. So we're going to do him this favor here and add some bonus content. This is for you, Mark and Joan, okay? Disappointed you didn't have this on the list, but I'm going to put it on the screen here now for people on the video. Len, you're going to love this, okay? Microsoft details Windows 11 recall AI privacy security. It records the screen. So Microsoft, in its Windows 11 operating system, is implementing this thing called the recall, which basically uses an AI model to record everything on your screen. So you can go back to certain points to see something, you know, remind yourself of what you were doing, whatever. The thing is that it just captures everything all the time. And says here it doesn't capture anything that's like DRM or password related, but I don't know, Len. It seems to me like this is a bad idea to have all this information stored somewhere, either presumably on device or off device. Some great screenshots here.
How far back does it go? I'm curious. Is it just like
it looks like it goes an awfully long way?
That's a lot of data that it's capturing.
I know. It recall not only records but also understands your screen, as shown in the screenshot. Again, sorry if you're on audio only. The recall has been used to search for Korean restaurant that Alice, and recall matches the keywords in various apps like WhatsApp, websites, maps. So it's watching your chats, your searches, your browsing. Does Windows 11 recall respect your privacy? The long and short is basically that they say it does, but it's up to you to be skeptical of that claim. Recall will not record one-time images, like private, you know, view once stuff in WhatsApp or Telegram. Might not record certain videos. Your data won't be uploaded to Microsoft servers or cloud and will not be used to train models. Everything is done locally. If you can trust your computer, you can trust the Windows 11 AI integration. I don't know, man. How's this for a story? This is not shipping with current hardware. It needs the Qualcomm. I can't remember what the chipset is, but
basically, I'm curious why that's the case.
40 trillion operations per second is what you need, and I guess that's not out there. So you need Snapdragon X PCs or AMD PCs. AMD PCs don't meet the minimum at all. Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, it will begin shipping with the new Qualcomm Snapdragon X Elite and Plus on June 18th.
So I'm not to defend this. Obviously, this is for privacy sense. It's brutal, absolutely brutal. But it doesn't look like this is going to be rolled out in all products. So you have to have the specific hardware.
I mean, not for now, but like in 3 years, is everyone going to have that much firepower in their hardware? Like probably, right? It's getting close.
Don't know. They could also optimize it so it doesn't have to use as much.
Yeah,
horsepower,
accessible. Yeah,
so you have basically two ends of the candle coming together, both burning, and meet in the middle. So yeah, I mean that's pretty crap. But are you surprised?
No, like, really. I'm not.
That's the thing. So you read about the story, and you know it should blow people's minds up, but it doesn't. It's like, you know what? It really sucks. It goes to show you that Windows is a security nightmare and a privacy nightmare.
I don't have my phone near me. I can kind of remember a time. I don't remember. This might be a fever dream, but I can almost remember a time where my phone had universal search. So if I typed in a query in like the universal search bar, it would feed me back stuff from certain apps, conversations, text messages, photos, stuff like that.
It's searching the whole phone.
Yeah. I suspect, honestly, Len, that the next iteration of iPhone in September, they're going to reintroduce that universal search under the AI banner. And I think that you're going to start seeing this more and more. To your point, I'm not surprised. And the reason I'm not surprised is because people like that stuff. People are so unorganized and reliant on their phones for every single thing in their life. And I'm not saying I'm any different. Like, I'm a millennial. I'm strapped to my phone as much as almost anybody. Not like screen time, but rather, you know, all my stuff is on my phone. People are going to like this feature, but they're not going to consider the privacy implications. That's you know, as people move away from the home PC, say for really specialized uses, maybe it's not as bad as having it on your phone. Like maybe, you know, if I think about the way we do CBP, the workflow, like if it could tell me stuff about files I've used and files I've searched, and, you know, I can go back and check like render settings on video or render settings on audio. Like I might be able to find that useful, but at what cost? It's really going to record everything I do and put context around it. It just doesn't, like, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, you know? Like, that's how it seems to me from a privacy standpoint.
Well, look at it from a, like, using Google. Doesn't it already kind of do that when you use the Google search engine?
Yeah, it tracks all your searches. Yeah.
So this is just doing it on a broader scale. I'm not defending this. I actually
kind of like that feature, but you're right. It's, again, like, the juice is not worth the squeeze. For the number of times you use it, what are you giving up? Even Google Maps. Yeah. I don't know if you have maps on your phone, but I'm not even going to tell you how I know this, okay? But I found this out the hard way. Google Maps, even if you don't put in a search for a location, if you go back in your search history, unless you disable this, if you go back in your location history, unless you disable it, Yeah. It'll tell you everywhere you've been, how long you were there. It's fucking insane. And sorry, I'm not supposed to swear on this show. It's insane. And I'll tell you what else. The context around that stuff is what would really make that incriminating. If suddenly it was able to pin down, like, oh, you were in, I don't know. Let's say this is going to make me sound like an absolute idiot, but whatever. Let's say you're at the gym or something, okay? And your phone is like, yeah, this person is at the gym, blah, blah, blah. And then around that thing, there's another text message about you meeting somebody at the gym, and it's your workout partner. And, you know, let's say you're going through a divorce or something. Those contexts where you're meeting your workout partner at the gym, and it puts that stuff together, and, you know, your husband or wife is like, no, my husband or wife was cheating on me at the gym. That was the beginning of this infidelity or whatever. Like, you're just inviting these connections where no connections exist. And again, there's really no purpose for this outside of what? Data collection. They just want that data to feed you something personalized that you might spend money on.
They crowdsource a lot of data too. So when you go to a place, it's going to say how busy it is
just
based on the phones that are there.
Yes, yes.
Traffic and stuff like that. So a lot of this is crowdsourced. And yeah, I have Maps, but it doesn't give any information. I run Graphene, and every time I open up Maps, it asks me, do you want it to connect? Sorry, do you want to give it access to location? I always click no. So if you go through my history, you could see when I started using Graphene, it stopped collecting that information. And that's exactly it. Like, it's the Maps is huge. It's taking a lot. Everywhere you walk, like, you even walk, take a bike, it just knows your route. Do you want somebody or something having that information, having a profile built for you when you leave the house, when you come back, what route you take? If you are okay with it, I mean, all the more power to you. But if you don't, take action. There's options available to protect you and your privacy.
Yeah, very dicey. Anyway, there you go, Mark and Joan. Free content for you this week. That was Access of Easy number, what did I say? 351? 351, right?
No, hang on. I got it. 351, yeah.
351. Hope you enjoyed it. Come back next week. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And enjoy your weekend. That was the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach, and we'll see you next week.
Take care.